Well, good morning, everybody. It's 10:30 in the morning on September 21st. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. We were away all last week, all right, at the EdNet conference in Scottsdale, which was wonderful. That's the industry conference. So we started back today with a show just a little before this one on the national teacher shortage, and now we've got a terrific show coming up from AASA, obviously the Superintendents Association, and it's all about the growing the growing concerns for school safety and security. But we've got an amazing quartet of experts on safety issues. Thank you, Jimmy Minicello, for setting up this wonderful show over at AASA. From two people from the Door Security and Safety Foundation. Then we've got the Director of Security. I'll introduce you all in a second for real. And emergency planning in Littleton. I assume that's Massachusetts. Might be wrong. Public schools. And Brian Garazzi. There you go, Brian. You're the one with the name. Who's the Maryland State Fire Marshal. And we're going to talk about what happens when there's a trouble inside the classroom. We have a lot of devices out there that stop people from entering the schools. But what happens if there's a problem inside the school? Those devices go into effect and our first responders can't get in there. And so there's a lot to talk about door safety, fire safety, and compliance, and that's what we're going to do with our experts. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org and tweet it out over at EduTalkRadio, just like we always do. I hope you'll take a minute and follow us over there. We'll send you a direct link before and after every show. We put up a new schedule every Saturday over at the website, education-talkradio.org. Without further ado, let me bring on my guests. I'm going to reintroduce them. I see circling here. Here we go. First of all, Jerry, are you there? Jerry Heppes?
Good morning. Yes, I am, Larry.
Pleasure to have you here, my friend. You are the CEO. I know you know this, Jerry, but I'm telling everybody else. You're the CEO. You're the CEO of Doors, of the Door Security and Safety Foundation. We're going to learn more about that. Okay, because I want to learn more. And then, Laura, are you there? The rose amongst the thorns, I can tell you that. Laura, are you there?
I am.
Hi, Laura. Call me Larry. How are you this morning?
Good. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Laura. How are you? That's good. And where are you located, Laura? Where's the Door Security and Safety Foundation?
I am the office today, so I'm in Chantilly, Virginia.
Oh, how pretty, and such a pretty little name, Chantilly, Virginia. Okay, that sounds great. Laura's the technical director over there. Brian, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Yeah, call me Larry, Brian. You're not from the Deep South. All my Deep South friends call me sir. They have to. It's their genetics. You have to call me Larry, okay?
Yes, sir, Larry.
There you go. Did it again. I got to talk to him about this. Okay, Brian. Hey, Brian, is it Gerasi or with a hard G, Gerasi?
That's Gerasi.
I blew that one. We're all the way around Gerasi. Thank you, Brian. Brian Gerasi is the Maryland State Fire Marshal and is on the board of directors for the National Association of State Fire Marshals. An honor to have you here, sir.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Well, you have no idea what a pleasure it's going to be by the time we're done, but I'm just thrilled that you are here. And Guy, are you here?
Yes. Good morning.
And Guy, is that right? Is it Littleton, Mass, or where?
Littleton, Colorado. Littleton Public Schools.
Colorado. I was wrong. I'm sorry. Thank you for getting up so early. Okay. Forgot about that Littleton. There's a Littleton in Massachusetts. Okay. I'm in Maine, by the way. Guy Grace is the Director of Security and Emergency Planning for the Littleton Public Schools. Okay. And we're going to talk about, and I don't know how to say this, guys. Help me out here. We get a lot of people are telling us how to bolt our doors, but maybe I should just say it that way. And then what happens if the police and fire can't get in there because the doors are bolted? And what are the problems inside the school, inside the class, as opposed to outside? And we're going to talk about what the compliance issues are and all that concerning active shooters, which just happened again, unfortunately, in Washington, okay, just last week. Fire and all that sort of thing. Okay, so I want to start off, though. I want to go back to Jerry. Is it Heppes? Jerry, is that how you pronounce his last name? Heppes. Thank you. Jerry Heppes, CEO of the Door Security and Safety Foundation. I never heard of that. I've heard of the fire state fire marshals, etc. Tell us what that Door Security and Safety Foundation does.
Thanks, Larry.
You're welcome.
First of all, it's a pleasure to be on this program with you and to also addressing the AASA on really a pretty timely and critical topic of school safety. And as you mentioned, I'm the CEO of the Door Security and Safety Foundation. I'm also the CEO of the Door Hardware Institute. And our members, industry designs and builds door openings. And we really understand how important safety is to the school community. I mean, our industry provides life safety and security, and the products, Larry, in the doorway are the tools we use to provide life safety and security. So our members' roles is to design openings in schools which address a variety of scenarios. If you think about it, we all know that doorways provide privacy. We realize that openings secure a classroom for theft. We realize that door openings provide egress in the case of the need to evacuate. And also, in the horrible situation of active shooters, they can provide a safe haven from potential violence. But openings, Larry, unfortunately, can also be misused in the instance of bullying, sexual assault, and fights. And our industry really takes that responsibility and that balance seriously. I mean, we understand what is at stake if the door opening is not equipped to handle each of those various scenarios. Lives can be changed forever. Lives can actually be lost, as we know. And, you know, Larry, we're parents. We have teachers in our families. And that's what really motivated this industry to launch the Door Security and Safety Foundation, which is it's an advocacy foundation whose mission is to promote secure and safe openings that enhance life safety through awareness and education. And we focus at awareness and education on the building design community, code officials, code authorities, and then facility management communities, such as those who design schools and engineers and maintenance professionals who manage those facilities on a daily basis. And the foundation exists off the generosity of private donations from an industry who really understands that critical role in every building every day.
Wow, that was quite a bit. I have two questions for you. I ran into my friend Jim McGarry at the conference I was just at. He's at the Education Market Association. They're having their facilities conference in, I think, Kansas City at the end of the end of October. Okay, do you guys go to that by any chance?
We don't, but it sounds like we should.
Well, I can introduce you guys. Okay,
thank you.
It seemed to me like something that made sense, and I was just talking to him about it 2 days ago in Scottsdale. The other thing I want you to do, which is going to be a very odd question from your point of view, I want you to define the term door opening. Okay,
great.
You design door openings, and the reason I'm asking that is because nobody thinks about a door. Okay, no offense to the one. But you know what I mean. The door just opens and we go through it, and except for a little bit of design, nobody thinks about a door. I want you to describe that term door opening from a technical point of view, or you might want to put that over to Laura. It's up to you.
I'll take a first shot at it, and then maybe Laura
you
can
go.
Add some additional points. You know, Larry.
Laura, when the CEO gets it wrong, you are going to step in and help him. How's that?
You correct it, which will happen. Larry, you can't offend me with your statement that, you know, it's just a door. We don't know much about doors, because you are absolutely spot on. Doors are taken for granted. If they work fine, we don't think twice about them. Where we get serious about doors is when there's a situation where a doorway needs to provide egress, or a scenario where there is a fire and you don't want the fire to spread and smoke, et cetera. So you asked about to define a door opening, and the best way to think of it is we actually refer to them as door assemblies. And there is a variety of things that a doorway has to do. And if you think about an example of a fire door, and this is where Laura is going to correct me, I will assure you. But if you think about a fire door, in essence, at one point there's a fire in a building, and that door has to be used for egress, get people out of that building. However, if that building's in a classroom, eventually that door is going to have to shut up. It's a fire door. and it's going to have to shut, or if people are in the stairwells trying to get out, you want that fire door to shut. So no longer is that door about egress. That door now becomes a fire door barrier because you don't want that fire to spread. And then when you bring in the first responders, you know, the people that Brian obviously represents, they want to make sure they're safe. They're in there fighting the fire, and if a fire is raging behind a fire door and it's to a temperature that there's no way a firefighter can survive in that room, we want that door to stay locked. We want it to become a barrier. And cool things kind of happen, cool, at least to our industry. Pins go into the floor, pins go into the frames. The things that do to make that door become a barrier. So just to kind of recap, initially get people out of the room, and then all of a sudden that door becomes a barrier, and it's pretty complicated. And that's when we realize the importance that doors play. Laura, you want to add to that or correct me?
Yeah, I think you probably did a pretty good job with that. Generally, a door assembly is a door frame and the hardware, the complete unit that compromises the entire assembly. It's usually a opening pierced in a wall in some way that allows, you know, occupants from one side to the other. So I think Jerry explained all the technicalities of it at a high level.
Larry, that took 30 years for me to get to that point, so.
You did good. You did good. You got an A. You're getting into college. You get a degree from the University of Larry. I want to swing over to Brian Geraci, right, Brian?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Maryland State Fire Marshal and the Board of Directors of the National Association of State Fire Marshals. And by the way, I want to echo what the firefighters. I met two guys down in Scottsdale. They were in uniform in the lobby, and I asked them what they did. They were firefighters from San Diego, but they were assigned to FEMA, and they were just in Texas and Florida, okay, to help the poor people there with the hurricanes. And of course, I thank them, but, you know, the folks you work with are just astounding, and they're the ones that rush in when everybody else is rushing out. And so a big thank you. You can spread the word for me, Brian, okay? A big thank you to everybody, okay?
I will do that. Very much.
Yeah, it's really impressive what you do. You know, I talked about an active shooter situation. I'm going to get the guy in a few minutes, but Brian, I want you to talk about doors in schools from a firefighter's point of view.
Well, obviously, like you know, Jerry just mentioned, some of these doors are fire doors. They are rated doors. They're tested by a laboratory to meet a certain degree of temperature and be able to hold fires back and that such. Most of our schools are sprinklered, though, these days. So we have sprinkler systems in mostly all of our schools throughout the country. So that's early suppression and hopefully put the fire out. But to say that, the doors themselves then act as a smoke barrier. Obviously, we're still going to have a smoke scenario with the sprinkler system activated. We're still going to have smoke, and hopefully that door keeps the smoke from spreading throughout the rest of the building. Also, we share the same concerns that Jerry has with regards to these barricade devices being used on these doors and having some type of assault or something else going on within the classroom and the barricade device put in place where you know, first responders, and even we had these devices evaluated here by some of our SWAT teams, and they weren't liking them at all. It just provided too much time for them to get in and make entry. You know, the SWAT guys like to do dynamic entries and those types of things, and this is a barrier for them as well, not only for the fire department to get in to fight the fire, but to help someone who may be in need of help in these classroom scenarios where they're being assaulted or something along that lines. Also, these devices that are out there, you know, they take a certain amount of some type of knowledge and special knowledge to use and how to put them in place and how to get them out of place. And if, you know, for some reason the teacher's incapacitated, you know, will the children know how to, you know, remove this type of barricade device? You know, currently in the national consensus standards throughout the United States and the fire codes, you know, these types of devices are not permitted. So, you know, we take a close look at that, and we haven't permitted them here in the state of Maryland. We were asking people to use code-compliant locking and latching devices that are out there and continue to do that.
And you're on the board of directors of the National Association of State Fire Marshals. okay? And my curiosity is, Maryland's a pretty good state, okay? I live in Maine. We can use them as an example. Are there states that aren't complying as well as they should?
Well, obviously, this has been a very hot topic issue, as mentioned
above.
No pun
intended. Yeah, no pun intended.
And,
it's a hot topic, yeah.
You know, and it's surprising to me that since the Columbine shootings, you know, many, many years ago, and I'm sure the gentleman from Colorado speak about that, but,
yeah.
You know, I'm surprised that we're still in a situation where we're at right now, as far back as that went. But there are some states, Michigan and Ohio, passed legislation to allow these devices to be used. There were some certain criteria and certain guidelines on how they were to be used. But those two states that I know of currently allow these types of devices to be put in place.
Wow, it's a very strange guy. Your director of security, Guy Grace, and emergency planning in Littleton, Colorado, not Massachusetts. Sorry, Guy. Again, thanks for getting up a lot earlier than everybody else did. Okay, and right, I appreciate it. Littleton, Colorado, director of security and emergency planning. You're the man on the spot. You're the man on the scene. You've actually had an active shooter situation in Littleton. That wasn't Columbine, was it?
Well, we had that's in a different school district, but it's in my community about 3 miles away. However, I experienced – in my school district experienced a active shooter incident on in December 13, 2013 on an attack on Arapahoe High School.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So what I'm coming to you and everybody here that's on this radio, and I thank you for inviting me here, I'm going to say a couple of things.
You're welcome
anytime. So what I believe is, you know, the barricades, as everybody has elaborated on, the barricades are something, it's kind of like a, in many ways, a useless reactionary deployment of equipment. What we need to be focusing on in school safety is empowering our staff and our students to respond to violent situations that may take place on or near a school grounds. And what we're also doing is empower, when we're teaching these kids and we're empowering them to be able to respond to violent situations at the school, but also violent situations that may take place anywhere else. So when we look at this, that's what we should be focusing on. But also, too, in the active shooter incident that I'm referencing that I was involved in 2013, I would say to you the most important piece that we had was empowering the students and staff to react, but also the ability for our doors with the standard locks that work, using the doors as the barricade and the sheltering or the evading and the care concept of taking care of each other in these emergencies and either hot sheltering or getting away is what we need to be focusing on. So what I worry about at barricades is when we put barricades up, you know, we lose our dynamics to escape, to respond to the situation. You could have, you know, how do you know? Sometimes these people in active shooter incidents, they have co-conspirators. So all of a sudden now you've locked another threat in the room with you, and now you've lost that option to get out of the facility. And if we look at I would suggest any of the people listening today, go to the National Association of School Resource Officers website and the National Association of School Psychologists website and read about the options-based lockdown. And what I'm going to say is focus on implementing a protocol designed to empower your staff and your students to respond. That's what's going to save lives. And it's going to save lives in the school and out of school. Sorry, go ahead.
Those two groups you mentioned, NASRO, okay, and National Association of School Psychologists, are on my show quite often. Okay, and I'm familiar with both, and especially in what we're talking about today, NASRO, the National Association of School Resource Officers. And I do recommend people go to those sites and really get it. The other thing that struck me, what you said was, you know, of course, Columbine was the first time a school shooting that was national really, really happened, and it was a bit chaotic. But today kids understand that there were lockdowns and what to do, et cetera, which brings me to my next question. Guy, I got to ask this. How, and I don't mean this sarcastically at all, how did you learn to be All right, the director of security and emergency planning for a public school district. We are Education Talk Radio. We're talking to school districts all over the country, particularly today, school administrators and district administrators. And I mean this totally for real. What attributes did you bring? What training did you bring that allowed you to not only know what you're doing, but to get the right training across to the whole staff and faculty?
Well, as a school security director, I've been doing this for 30 years. When I walked into the door here in 1989, I could not imagine or foresee what we would be doing now as a school security director. So what I do is you're constantly evolving. Like the technology and practices that we do in school safety, they're constantly evolving. You have to be able to constantly evolve, and that's by continuing your education, analyzing the incidents you're dealing with, analyzing the all hazards that you deal with on any given day, and working with the cultures and the community, working through the processes and analyzing events that may happen elsewhere, and analyzing what potential threats that you may deal with on any given day. You have to be able to continue to evolve. We look at the types of situations we dealt with in 1989. It's like the prehistoric days to what we're dealing with right now in 2018. Yeah. So you have to be able to evolve in your technology and in school safety.
And what were you when you started? What were you? What should a school district look for in there? Yeah. I'm just curious.
Oh.
Were you a teacher? Were you a fireman? Were you a police officer? What were you?
Well, I was in the military, and I came out of
– Even better. Think of that.
And I came out of the military, and I actually took this position to pay for college. And in the mid-1990s, I discovered, hey, this is a – I was looking at going into a law enforcement career, and actually – was accepted, but then what I was doing was I just said, hey, this is a pretty darn good career, and it has some new challenges. It was a new area, and I decided to go forward with this, continue it, and I don't regret any of it. I mean, but I can say that this job is a 24/7, 365 position, and I hear that often from other school security directors as well.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. And are you, by any chance, are you a school resource officer as well?
Well, we have about 13 school resources officers
we
contract
Fabulous.
Out
Fabulous.
With our local law enforcement agencies. And then we have 17 security officers that work in the schools. And then we have another 12 district security officers that work with me in here. So it's what I'm saying, there's a profession. I look at the profession of school safety. It's a profession. There are school resource officers. There are school security officers. There are many people that are invested in security. And even that goes down to our school secretaries, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. Well,
everybody's got
to get this. You think you're kidding? It was I can't remember where it was. There was a school secretary. There was an active shooter in a school a few years ago, and it was the school secretary who talked the person out of firing further. So you're absolutely right. You know, our focus seems to be when we talk about these things, gentlemen and lady, okay, about school shooters. Where they, of course, that's the big news, and it's frightening and concerning and horrifying and all that sort of thing. But I want to go back to Jerry for a second, again, who's CEO of the Door Security and Safety Foundation. Okay, Jerry, you have a website. It's called lockdontblock.org, lockdontblock.org. And I want you to talk about that. But it brings up an interesting point. Okay, the big shooting situations, though they happen, it's kind of like an airline crash. They happen, but they're very rare, yet they get the big news. The big news, okay, with schools is the chance of fire, okay, some kind of school violence, and also bullying, which, by the way, from what I understand, brought about that shooting last week from this child. Okay, what does lockdontblock.org actually do? I want people to go over there.
Thank you, Larry. A couple of points, and you hit it on the head. And look, none of us on this phone want to minimize the tragedies of school shootings, but in fact, they are rare. Statistically, other emergencies such as fire, bullying, etc., are three times more likely to occur than an active shooter event. And we don't want to put any occupants at risk, but we know today, and our and you mentioned the block. Lock Don't Block website that we started. It was a micro site that we started specifically for this community, for the school administrators, maintenance personnel, et cetera, community, to provide a variety of resources and tools they can use to really understand and become educated on this whole concept. I mean, it has everything on that website from statistics, which talk about, you know, for instance, the according to the National Center for Education, in 2012, students ages 12 to 18 were victims of more than 1.37 million non-fatal victimizations at school, including out of that 749,000 violent victimizations. That just begins to put in perspective that anytime you provide, and one of the, I think one of the more fascinating statistics, Larry, in regards to school shootings, is that according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the FBI, students, not outsiders, are the most likely people to commit violence on school grounds. And as was mentioned by Brian and Guy, these barricade devices make those easier to carry out. I mean, a scene at Virginia Tech, the West Nickel Mine Schoolhouse, and Platte Canyon High School, shooters often barricade themselves in a classroom. And so that's why, you know, we wanted to create a site dedicated to providing this type of statistical information, to providing solutions and resources. There's the, I'll steal this from Brian, the National Association of State Fire Marshals has published a white paper entitled Classroom Door Security and Locking Hardware, which addresses security concerns. There's several fact sheets. We have a section on liabilities of barricade devices. We have a section on classroom assessment guides. What kind of locks do your – so teachers can actually go on there and learn about what kind of locks they actually have on their classrooms. And part of this solution is getting familiarity with the opening. So in that instance of where there's an emotional, you know, high-stress scenario taking place, that people know how to respond because they're more familiar with what to look for and how the doorway is open. And as you said perfectly earlier, we take doors for granted. We don't want people to take doors for granted because they're part of the solution.
Well, they are part of the solution, and I mean, it's just that's everywhere. And when I remember, I was looking at a building to buy, and all the doors, the exit doors. This was a very old building where I used to live in Exeter, New Hampshire. All the doors opened inward. Okay, the exit doors. So therefore, there was a huge crowd trying to escape a fire. Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Larry, there are codes that the way this country is built, the building standards and codes exist.
They grandfather stuff in, or the budget's tight. Well, we'll let you go another year. That doesn't work.
Absolutely, and that's where you need look. When it comes to designing buildings, you need people to understand all the codes and standards. It takes people in our industry a good 5 to 7 years to become really knowledgeable. You know, someone like Laura's, as young as she is, has been in the industry a long time. And is one of those experts, but it takes a tremendous understanding of balancing life safety and security, and it's all driven by the code process. And at the end of the day, what all of us are pursuing is let's let the codes dictate the use of these devices. And these barricade devices, unfortunately, are not code compliant, and that's why we have dedicated our time and efforts to try to make this industry, because we believe the school superintendents are the deciding factor on these types of products. We wanted to make them knowledgeable and aware on this type of decision, and that's why we created this microsite specifically for them, and we started our campaign opening the door to school safety and created videos and continue to communicate to this critical to school superintendents, which is the critical, we think, decision maker in this whole process.
And the Door Security and Safety Foundation. Then you, what is the actual? What is the website of that, Laura? I'll ask you. so that I know Lock Don't Block is a microsite with kind of within that specifically. But what about the Dorsa Security and Safety Foundation? Laura.
Yeah, it's the doorsecurityandsafety.org. So just doorsecuritysafety.org is the website for the Door Security and Safety Foundation. There's also the Door and Hardware Institute, which is the institute that educates folks in our industry, is www.dhi.org.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I have one question. Oh, go ahead, please. Go.
Just going to finish off. That's a good point.
Okay.
And Laura brings up a good point, because that website, all those websites contain who do you turn to? There are experts who are certified, meeting certain critical standards across the country. And those websites, if you're a superintendent with a particular area, you can go on those websites and you can identify certified people to answer your questions. And they are, believe me, well motivated to make the school safer. So that's a great resource as well.
It really is. Brian, let me ask you this. You're, again, the Maryland State Fire Marshal. I'm just going to ask you, Maryland, okay? How happy, on a sliding scale of 1 to 10, Brian, Geraci, how happy are you with the compliance and safety of schools regarding fire? You're the State Fire Marshal in Maryland. Sliding scale of 10. 10, you couldn't be happier, and 1, you're really, really, really unhappy. Where do the schools lie in Maryland? In your opinion?
With regards to fire, I would say we're at a 10.
Yes,
We're very proactive here in Maryland with our fire prevention efforts, and we have a tremendous, great partnership with all the schools and the security directors and the school administrators. The one other advantage we have here in Maryland is we have the Maryland Center for School Safety, which is a body out of the same department I'm in with the Maryland State Police that kind of coordinates all that efforts on a statewide level. So between the two of us, we really do have a great partnership in reaching out to the schools and the Maryland Department of Education. And it really does take all of us to make the schools safer. And we work very well together in doing that.
You know, Brian, I got to tell you something. I've asked that sliding scale question 1 to 10 to a lot of people on the many, many, many thousands of shows I've done. You're the first one to ever give me a 10, and I am thrilled to hear that. Congratulations, Brian Geraci.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. I got to ask you this. As you talk to your fellow state fire marshals in other states, okay, what have you heard from them? Regarding your safety and
they're doing the same challenges that we have. I mean, obviously, if you can get the state legislatures,
yeah, but you're
in Michigan and Ohio.
If I may, you're the Bo Derek. You're the Bo Derek of states. You're 10. Okay.
Yeah,
when you talk to your friends,
they're facing the same challenges as we are with the barricade devices, and obviously there's some pushback, but I think once you educate these folks and educate the administrators and the superintendents, they kind of understand where we're coming from with regards to the fire code. Clearly, these devices are not compliant with the fire code throughout the country, not just here in Maryland. But, several folks in Michigan and Ohio got to their legislators, and, you know, it's an emotional issue, and, those folks, they were able to change certain laws there in those two states.
Good. It's good. I got news for you. You can tell them this is going to be a hell of a lot more emotional if they make a mistake, if they don't
absolutely.
Do it right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, this is. Go ahead.
It's Larry. This is Jerry again. It's important, again, statistically, to look at some statistics. There has never been an instance of an active shooter violating a code compliant lock on a door.
Wow.
It's just not their the MO. These school shootings are typically 5 to 7 minutes in length. The MO of the shooter is to keep moving, and it's just there's never been an instance of that taking place. So we just say let the codes work, let the proper products work.
Yeah, get it working exactly. By the way, Jerry, before I forget, my good friend Jimmy at ASA did not send me your email. Could you send me an email? Okay, and I'll get you in touch with my friend Jim McGarry about that Ed Facilities Conference. And it's edutalklarry@gmail.com. Okay,
absolutely.
Laura or Jerry, edutalk, anybody can write me, but it's edutalklarry@gmail.com. Okay, just get that to me. I'll get you that information. Guy, when you talk to your fellows in Colorado, which, of course, is where Columbine happened. I hate to keep bringing that up. Okay, and you had your own situation up in Littleton. Okay, Guy, when you talk to your fellow directors of security at school districts, where it should be on everyone's mind as it should be in all the 49 other states, what do you hear?
Well, what we hear in I'll just point out, I'm one of the steering directors for the Partner Alliance for Safer Schools. So I travel around the country. So I'll elaborate from Colorado's perspective. In Colorado's perspective right now, we're focusing on locks. Our state legislatures have legislated that we will have all of our locks across the state of Colorado will be compliant to be able to be locked from the inside in our doors. Because there's a lot of doors out there that have double locks on both sides or different types of locks, but they're not
right.
friendly towards getting into a lockdown situation. So that's the focus right now is getting the funding to have lockdown friendly locks installed in our classrooms in Colorado. But in across the United States, but everywhere, obviously active shooter events are very rare. And, you know, but we hear and see them, they frequently do happen across the country. In the scheme of things, every 2 to 3 weeks. And as it was stated, they're over in 2 minutes. And for most schools, they're over in 2 minutes or less.
Wow.
And what we're all focusing on is most school districts, the average age of a school in the United States of America is 54 years of age. So when we look at these schools
you must have removed my high school in Philadelphia from that scenario, okay? Because I think Ben Franklin went to my high school, and it's still operating. But go ahead, anyway. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that over the average, so 54 years of age. Now, what the schools, districts across the country are struggling with is, and many of them, is funding a push-button lock that is easy to operate from the inside of the classroom for the teachers, for the students. Because, you know, even though when we're teaching options-based lockdown, and I'm going to say that options-based lockdown will save lives, when we're teaching them, we have to teach the kids to be able to lock a door too. And just that simple showing them how to lock a door and having a good lock on that door is going to save lives in one of those bad situations. I could tell you, in the Arapahoe situation, when law enforcement came in and we were searching the building for, you know, the evacuation piece, they had to breach 69 doors to get people in there. So those doors were not barricaded. Those 54-year-old doors were quite sturdy as they were, and those locks they had on place at that time did just fine, is what I want to point out. And what people are struggling with. They struggle with, too, they hear things about barricades. They hear about different types of technologies. But what it is just focus on the simple things. And to me, a lock, a push-button lock, and doing options-based lockdown practices is the way to go. And one interesting point was back in 2012, our teachers' union also wanted – as part of their conditional negotiations, wanted to ensure that the district put these push-button locks on all the doors across the district.
Wow. So great.
Employees are quite aware of that. And that gives them peace of mind. Having these locks on the door, just that simple lock, goes a long way in empowering the teacher to teach and the students to learn and the parents not to worry about their kids at school.
That's the best way to segue to an ending for this. It's lockdontblock.org from Jerry's group, the Door Security and Safety Foundation. Brian, thank you. And again, thanks to everybody you work with across the country, locally, et cetera, for being the ones who go in when everybody else is running out. I got to tell you, it's important. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And Guy, you just keep up the good work there. Come on the show anytime. edutalklarry@gmail.com and let me know, okay? And we'd love to have you talk about this further, okay?
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I also send me the name of that group you mentioned, the Partnership for Safer Schools or whatever you call that, okay?
Yes, Partner Alliance for Safer Schools. Thank you.
Just send me that information, and I would like to get a show together with them. And Jerry and Laura, you guys have finally defined for me the importance of door openings. And I mean that
there
sincerely.
You go.
I mean, you really did a good job. Yes.
Just go on Lock, Don't Block. The information on PASS that Guy mentioned, NASMA, all those resources are one click away for you right on Lock, Don't Block. That's why we created this, to make it easy for this industry. So you'll see they have a statement paper on there that PASS that Guy has done, been involved in, and it's all right there in Lock, Don't Block. Very simple.
LockDon'tBlock.org. It's key stuff, everybody. Thank you, all four of you. You were wonderful. I really appreciate it. I look forward to hearing from you. Okay?
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay. Wow, what a group. An amazing quartet, as I described it, of school safety experts. This is interesting. And, you know, it's almost a half-kidding question. Well, why worry about the definition of a door opening? Now you know. Okay? LockDon'tBlock.org. And the Door Security and Safety Foundation, okay, their new program is Opening the Door to School Safety. All right, it's really good. Jimmy Minicello over at AASA, thank you so much. They're obviously at AASA.org, and they tweeted AASAHQ. Okay, Jimmy, great show. Thank you for helping me put this together. We'll archive it at education-talkradio.org and tweet it out at EduTalkRadio. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Free K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for listening.